If you ask me, he deserves iconic status beyond his genre, along the lines of, say, Bob Marley or Kurt Cobain. But unlike those artists, the rough edges of Easy's image have never been smoothed over. It's easy to forget that Cobain was a moody heroin addict, or that Marley was a womanizer who mistreated his wife. But Easy's still seen as a volatile ghetto kid with a jerry curl and a gun. When it comes to keeping his name part of today's culture, his estate hasn't been able to match the efforts of Tupac's estate, which has constantly reinvented the artist posthumously across all forms of media. Other surviving N.W.A. members, MC Ren and DJ Yella, have been even less in the public eye, though the group's film and their 2016 induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame put them back in the spotlight. As a result, DJ Yella's services behind the turntables have been in high demand around the world, perhaps a satisfying change from his previous line of work, porno director. Following Easy's death, he made many adult films, including one called DJ Yella's Straight Outta Compton. "I gave that up in like 07, Yella told me about his porn career. "The internet killed it." MC Ren, meanwhile, today lives far from the streets of Compton where he grew up. In June 2014, I met him in Palm Springs, the sweltering resort town 2 hours inland from Los Angeles, where he moved to be closer to his parents. It's unfortunate that he no longer puts out albums regularly. N.W.A. wouldn't have been what it was without his songwriting and commanding flow, and he was one of Eazy-E's main ghostwriters. As revealed by his solo work, he could excel at more than just playing a role. He was a visionary artist in his own right. He still goes as hard as ever when he does make new music. "Fuck your money, fuck your cars, nigga spit some hot bars," he raps on a 2014 track called Rebel Music. But he does it on his own terms, on his own release schedule. He can afford it, flush with NWA royalties that never run dry. An assured legacy. "Who's your top 10? Is it MC Shan? Is it MC Ren?" Nas rapped in 2006. We meet at the Hard Rock Hotel. In tow is his wife of 21 years, Yasmin, and their 9-year-old daughter, who wears a neon green t-shirt reading, "My dad thinks I'm awesome." Ren himself wears a white taqiya on his head. After joining the Nation of Islam in 1993, he became an Orthodox Muslim 2 years later. His conversion was influenced by his friend DJ Train, an NWA affiliate and DJ for JJ Fad, who died in a 1994 house fire. Before his death, Train and Ren planned to travel to Egypt, and so Ren made the trip solo the next year. As we sit down to eat, Ren's daughter orders macaroni and cheese, but he ends up sending it back because it has bacon. Ren is a bit shorter than I'd expected, but bulkier, and wears no jewelry other than a silver wedding ring. He seems a bit uncomfortable at times, and doesn't display an effervescent charisma, which perhaps makes sense, considering he's always fashioned himself as an anti-Hollywood type, who calls bullshit while others play industry games. True to his straight-talking self, MC Ren told the Going Way Back show that the film Straight Outta Compton was about 80% accurate. He complained publicly when the initial marketing largely excluded him and DJ Yella. Today, we also discuss the sale of Dr. Dre's headphones company Beats to Apple, which netted Dre hundreds of millions of dollars. "That's a blessing," Ren says, without a trace of jealousy. "That's dope." He has critical words for a different figure from his past, however. "When I told my math teacher in high school I was going to be a hip-hop star, he clowned me every day," Ren wrote on Twitter in 2016. "Now I'm in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame." After N.W.A. split, group ghostwriter D.O.C. continued working with Dr. Dre, and even mounted something of a solo comeback in 2015. Out of nowhere, his voice, which failed him after his car accident more than 25 years earlier, suddenly started to improve. It's not back to its original strength, but he felt confident enough to perform in his hometown Dallas in October 2015. Backed by platinum R&B singer Erykah Badu, who's the mother of his daughter Puma, and Scarface from Ghetto Boys, the show was rapturously received. No Ruthless Records alum, however, have seen success like Dr. Dre. Beyond the windfall of the beat sale and the ongoing success of his Aftermath label, which spawned the careers of world-beating rappers Eminem, 50 Cent, The Game, and Kendrick Lamar, Dre remains relevant as a performer, and as a producer, he's still setting trends. His personal life, meanwhile, is stable. Married for more than two decades, his wife Nicole supported him through the tragic 2008 death of his son Andre Young Jr. from an overdose of heroin and morphine. Still, even as he moved to extradite himself from the hard-knocked lifestyle, Dre hasn't been able to fully escape his past. Like Snoop, he's been taunted by Suge after leaving Death Row. Dre even took out a restraining order against Suge, which was why the latter was turned away from a production lot during the filming of an ad for the Straight Outta Compton film on January 29, 2015. After Suge left the scene, an on-set security guard followed him to the parking lot of a Compton restaurant, where Suge non-fatally ran him over, and Suge killed another man in the process. Suge was charged with murder, though he claimed the death was accidental. 10 years earlier, Suge was accused of paying a man to hurt Dre at the November 15, 2004 Vibe Awards, held in a hangar in the Santa Monica Municipal Airport. Shortly before receiving a Career Achievement Award that night, Dre was asked for an autograph and then sucker-punched, setting off a melee. The assailant, Jimmy James Johnson, received a year in jail. He claimed Suge Knight paid him $5,000 for the assault, which Suge denied. Dre wasn't hurt in the incident. Following the Vibe Awards incident, according to Lisa Johnson, Dre showed up at her home in the middle of the night. Johnson is the mother of three of Dre's children and has accused him of beating her. The pair had only intermittent contact since they stopped seeing each other in the early 90s, according to Johnson, which included court battles over child support and a home he purchased for her. But this night, arriving at Johnson's house, Dre insisted he had something important to tell her and the three girls. The middle daughter, LaToya, was not there, so he sent a cab to retrieve her. With the whole family assembled, Dre promised monies totaling $500,000 to be split among the four of them, though he later added stipulations and ultimately never gave it to them, Johnson and LaToya said. Dr. Dre had no comment. That night, Johnson said Dre, clearly shaken by the evening's assault, opened up to her. He asked me, "What did I see? Did I see harm coming towards him? Did I see anything wrong?" she recalled. I gave him a kiss on his forehead and told him he was going to be okay. He then put on a movie, The Ladies' Man, Johnson said. He sat down, watched it, and ate a bowl of cornflakes. Survival. Among this legendary cohort of gangster rappers, it is perhaps Snoop who had the most intriguing transformation of all. He managed to fully stamp out his differences with Suge. The two were even photographed together at a club in 2013. "My relationship with him is where it's supposed to be. It's respectful on both ends," Suge told Rolling Stone that year. Snoop didn't stop there, pledging to take his music in a more positive direction, even if it meant he sold fewer records. He worked to mend fences. Snoop hinted at this new direction during the Chicago Peace Treaty. In 1997, he and Corrupt reconciled with BG Knockout and Dresta, the Ruthless Brothers who spoke out against Death Row in the Real Compton City G's era. They even made a record together, though it never came out. In 2005, Snoop hosted a summit at a Universal City hotel called Protect the West. In attendance were California rappers representing various territories and factions, everyone from The Game to Young MC, who pledged to end disputes and increase their collective earning potentials. Call him Uncle Snoop, the trustworthy old-timer who fixes problems. You could look at me as like a counselor, a doctor, a psychologist, a priest, a big brother, a warden, a mayor, he told me in 2013. They didn't create this lane for us to hate each other and fight each other and be mad at each other. They created this lane for us to have an outlet, to do something with our lives. Having racked up firearm and drug charges over the years, he's not everyone's idea of a role model. But he founded a youth football league in 2005 and has worked the streets to quell dangerous gang beefs. His 2006 Unity song, Gangbangin' 101, paired him with Blood's MC, The Game, who rapped, "Red and blue rag tied in a knot." And as the years passed, Snoop's music has gotten more groovy. He pilgrimaged to Jamaica to create the reggae-influenced 2013 album, Reincarnated, under his Snoop Lion alias, which includes the moving anthem, No Guns Allowed. Soon after, as Snoopzilla, he teamed up with Dom Funk to make an old-school funk album. As promised, these albums weren't violent, and as he suspected, they didn't sell much either. But the man still lives well. He's got countless endorsement deals, and countless artists happy to have him on their songs. The key word in all of this? He lives. "Survival is what I'm here to do," he said at the press conference for the Swedish Sox while sitting on a throne. "I teach people how to survive through my experience." Hard-edged hip-hop of the style inspired by Ruthless and Death Row Records hasn't just survived, it's taken over. It's become the defining musical movement of a generation, largely remaking pop in its image. These days, even teen idols like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift are expected to be hip-hop literate. As shown by Snoop, Cube, and others, the same credentials that qualify you to be a hardcore rapper now qualify you to be a brand ambassador. The tropes and fashions brought in by gangster rap are routinely adopted by content creators wanting to appear edgy and cool. What has gangster rap ultimately left us with? I'd say a popular culture with fewer restrictions, for better or for worse. On the downside, TV, music, and movies have become coarser. More cursing, more sex, more violent images. Gangster rap, and its offshoot incarnations, hip-hop subgenres with names like trap, ratchet, and drill, isn't solely to blame for this, of course. But it's hard to argue that Easy and his disciples' glamorization of gunplay and derogatory names for women, for example, haven't spread outward. But gangster rap has also helped disenfranchised people gain a voice. Alonzo Williams, the leader of World Class Wrecking Crew, was initially against N.W.A.'s plan to tell it like it was on the streets of Compton, because he didn't think listeners were ready. The prevailing wisdom was that black entertainers were supposed to act proper, and that same logic applied to black people generally. Even if the situations they grew up in were marked by poverty, crime, injustice, and squalor, they were expected to present themselves as if nothing was wrong. N.W.A., Ice-T, and Tupac encouraged African Americans to speak up. The Black Lives Matter movement that began in 2013 likely wouldn't be what it is without Fuck the Police and Straight Outta Compton. Ice Cube's expression of the daily terrors felt by black people everywhere, on an album heard by millions, was liberating and empowering. The L.A. gangster rappers, or as they preferred, reality rappers, didn't just fight oppression. They showed pride for a culture, celebrating their people in all their messy glory, and with little regard for what anyone else thought. It was shocking to many, including white people and older black people, but it was timely and necessary. Inside the Trojan horse of catchy beats and clever rhymes, Dr. Dre and his brethren smuggled in the hopes, dreams, and fears of those who were otherwise mostly ignored. They took the experience of the inner city and made it understandable to people who had never set foot there. Gangsta rap, more than any other art form, made black life a permanent part of the American conversation.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Original Gangstas, the untold story of Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube, Tupac Shakur, and the birth of West Coast rap. Written by Ben Westhoff. Read by J.D. Jackson. Includes a Mac and PC compatible PDF of bonus material. Produced by Dennis Kale. Recorded by Mike Sandoval. Sound editing by Fred Koch. Mixing and mastering by Jeremy Wesley. Production supervised by Christine M. Farrell. Original Gangstas is also available in print and digital formats from Hachette Books, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2016 by Ben Westhoff. Audio production copyright 2016. Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.